The following podcast is for healthcare professionals only. All views expressed belong to our speakers and don't necessarily reflect those of Nestlé Health Science.
Hello and welcome to Inside Medical Nutrition Podcast, a podcast powered by Nestlé Health Science and hosted by me, Dr. Linnea Patel. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Marie Watson, a pediatric specialist dietitian, and we will be discussing her experience in managing enteral nutrition patients in the community. Hi, Marie, and welcome to the Inside Medical Nutrition podcast. Now, today we're going to be focusing on your experience of working with peptide feeds. And I know that peptide feeds have been generating a lot of buzz lately. So before we go into all of that, I would love it if you could tell me and our listeners a little bit about you. So you're a dietitian. What drew you to dietetics?
I was in a different type of career in 2004. So I started my journey. I was interested in nutrition and improving health. Yeah. So I went to uni in 2004 as a slightly older student and then qualified in 2008, Chester University. I then went into adult and it's about 18 months in adult and then decided my dream was to work in pediatrics. Okay. So then I traveled over to Sheffield Children's where I've been ever since. So I've been there about 13 years and absolutely love my role in the home enteral feed team.
Okay. And so what does your day-to-day life look like within the home enteral nutrition feed team?
So we're a little team. It's only me and my colleague and my dietetic assistant. And we've got quite a big cohort of patients. We've got about 250 in the Sheffield, and we cover the Sheffield area. So we cover whole majority of patients falling into any speciality, any that doesn't fall into certain specialities at the Children's Hospital, so those that don't fall into those. So we see neurodisability, cardiac, surgical, respiratory. So anybody that doesn't fall into a consultant like clinic comes into us. And like I say, we've got a large cohort, we've got 250 children.
Goodness.
So nice and busy. Keeps us nice and busy.
Absolutely. And who's referring those patients to you?
So at the moment, we get a large cohort off the wards. So from Sheffield Children, they'll come to us, or out of area. So from a district general, if you live in a Sheffield postcode, or from the other specialist centres around the area, so Leeds, Nottingham, they will refer in to us. Or we get them from our Jessops, which is our neonatal hospital. And they'll come into our service as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, they seem to come from everywhere.
No, absolutely. So a lot of your role is clinical from what I'm hearing. Do you have any other ongoing projects perhaps that you're involved in, for example, research or webinars?
So at the moment, we are quite a small team. We've been involved in some research regarding blended diet. But a lot of it is clinical at the moment. From a capacity point of view, we haven't got much capacity to do a lot of research, unfortunately. But we are trying to set up our own workshops because we support a lot of out-of-area dietitians from the district generals. As the main centre within the Yorkshire area, we support a lot of our colleagues
there. Yeah, okay, no, that's fantastic. So if we focus, Marie, so your role is within enteral nutrition and this conversation is very much around peptide feeds. Maybe let's take a step back because I know some of our listeners might be dietitians, but there are some that aren't. Are you able to give me a brief overview exactly what a peptide feed is and perhaps how it differs from other feeds?
Yeah. When I would describe a peptide feed to probably my colleagues as such, those consultants or doctors or even our parents and carers, we describe it as a partly hydrolyzed feed. So it's partly broken down from your standard feed, which is a whole protein.
Okay.
So nothing's been done to it. So when I describe it, it would be partly broken down, easy to digest, easier to tolerate.
Okay.
And that's what we find in a lot of our cohort of patients.
Okay. And who am I going to be giving this type of feed to?
Looking at our patient case, though, we'd look at patients that are struggling to tolerate the whole protein feeds. So those that are either absorbing the feeds very well, or vomiting, either got profuse diarrhea, and the reflux is not great. Any range of poor tolerance, we'd go down the peptide route just to see if this has improved the quality of life.
So are you starting the tube feed from the word go, or is there other modes of trying to feed them? And at what point do you then start the tube feed?
So what we normally find when they get referred into our service, they've normally got tube in. Okay. So a feed will have been started on the ward or whichever setting they're in, either throughout the area or through in the neonatal. The plan would have been started by the ward dietitians, and they'll come into our service. And at that point, we then go along that journey with them. So we would find that they may plod along quite nicely on the original feed, but then as their condition progresses or worsens, then we might be looking at moving to a peptide type feed.
Okay. And then once you start using the peptide feed, talk me through perhaps the process that you would go through with one of your patients.
So depending on the condition, if we're transitioning from a whole protein over to a peptide, we do a slow transition over, depending on how severe the symptoms are. If the symptoms are really quite severe with the whole protein and parents want to do it a lot quicker, we'd move them straight over. But normally we do one feed change per day, moving them over from whole protein to the peptide, okay, just to make sure that we're actually not having any adverse effects with that introduction. But normally,
and what are you looking for, Marie, in terms of adverse effects?
So we'll be looking for probably even worse tolerance on the peptide feed in comparison to the whole protein. So if we're finding the diarrhea's worsened, the reflux has worsened, the vomiting's worsened, we'd say go back to the whole protein and remove the peptide. But normally, on probably 99% of the cases where we move them over, we don't actually experience. We see it improve symptoms where the vomiting does reduce, the diarrhea reduces, and so does the reflux.
Okay, so we're slowly moving a patient onto the peptide feed. So you start with one, you're saying, and do you go all the way to the entire nutrition coming from a peptide feed, or is there this hybrid feeding pattern that you commonly use?
Normally with a peptide feed, we do a whole transition over. We normally find even leaving a little bit whole protein feed within their feeding regime, it doesn't suit them. We normally find once they move over to peptide, the tolerance improved. So yeah, I would never do a hybrid with a whole protein and peptide. In my practice, I would move them all over to a peptide-based feed.
Yeah. Now I've heard we talked about peptide feeds. Is there a kind of low energy peptide feed, and in what circumstances are you using that, and why is that a good option of a feed to use?
So the low calorie ones, we find some of our patients have a tendency to gain excessive weight, and that's mainly based on their condition, lack of mobility, the lack of their energy need. So what we do find is when we're looking towards trying to prevent excessive weight gain, because we do find with those type of children, excessive weight gain actually worsens their condition. So we'd look at the lower calorie versions to try and get a volume, but actually providing a good range of vitamins and minerals.
Okay. And obviously working in pediatrics, that's a delicate balance to get, because obviously changes in feed have a bigger impact, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we normally find if we're using a 1 cal per mil feed or needing to use reduced volumes, we're not actually achieving the protein or the vitamins and minerals that we need within a lower volume. So the benefit of using a lower calorie but a higher volume, we're able to achieve the protein and the vitamins and minerals without having to add any extras in there to actually, yeah, provide those.
Yeah. For any dietitians that are new to this area or just getting into enteral nutrition, I mean, are there tools or guidance that kind of support them working in this area of dietetics?
Yeah, I think it can go on experience. I suppose a newly qualified dietitian coming into practice could be a little bit daunting if you find you've got a child gaining excessive weight and which route to go down. I suppose sometimes it can be quite daunting to use a peptide feed for some newly qualified. I think the benefit of paediatrics, they're normally experienced dietitians coming into paediatrics, but I don't think there's any guidance. I think sometimes it's from a more senior colleague that would be guiding you through practice and supporting the use and what methods we use.
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking in terms of a decision tree, right? Because there's the different types of fees to use and knowing which one to use when. But I guess it goes back to the idea that you were saying you're constantly monitoring tolerance and compliance. And I guess the information that you get from that then informs whether or not the patient is tolerating the fee that you're actually on.
Yeah.
What would be really useful, Marie, is if you could take us on some reflections from patient cases, because that sometimes brings it to life in terms of how you're using this these feeds. So you've kind of talked me through the process that you'll go through, but I'm imagining there's a lot of challenges that you come across when starting a new nutritional protocol, particularly using low energy feeds. Could you maybe talk me through some examples of things that you've faced?
Yeah, so if we're looking at one of my patients, which I've used a low-calorie peptide feed with. I suppose it's a journey that we start on, and when we started on the journey with the patient, we would always go for a whole protein feed, but until that's not tolerated. And at that point, with this particular patient, there was a point where we looked at, he was struggling to tolerate the whole protein, so we moved to peptide-based feed. And at that point, that was worked well. Volume packed below because he was had a tendency to gain excessive weight. So what we did find is as we moved through his journey, his condition unfortunately progressed and seizures worsened. And parents were reporting he was hungry. So okay. We were on a peptide feed. We were 1 cal per mil, he was gaining excessive weight and seizures okay. were worsening. Parents felt seizures related to hunger. I don't clinically, I wasn't sure if that was the case, but from a parental perception, they felt that that was. So we looked at changing, we're going half of the 1 cal in the morning and we're moving to the low cal, 0.6 in the evening. So okay. we actually had a bit of a combination feed in there. And parents were really pleased with the outcomes. We felt this was beneficial, the weight stabilised, and he was less hungry. But then as over the next 6 months, what we then did find is in the day when he was on the whole protein, on the 1 cal per mil feed, what we found is that we changed seizure medication. Mm-hmm. And the family were finding that this absorption in the day from the 1 cal peptide feed slower. So they found after the overnight feed, the absorption was better. So in the morning, stomach was empty, was able to have his medication. So they wanted that during the day. So we then moved to the 0.6 peptide feed in the day. And what we found is the absorption was so much better, which then allowed the gaps for the seizure medication. Uh-huh. So overall, this improved seizures and also helped from a hunger perspective because parents reported because it was larger volumes, he was less hungry and then was able to have these bigger blocks where we were able to have the medication. So overall, we moved all over to peptide 0.6 and it worked really well. The doctor's really pleased, which is always a bonus. So and parents, and we've carried on 0.6 in a larger volume and actually maintained his weight quite nicely.
Very good. Very good. No, I love that. And I guess it sounds like the parents that you were working with there were really influential in helping the decision because they were picking up some symptoms, which then they also gave you the feedback. But I can also imagine on the other end of the spectrum that sometimes you get challenging parents who perhaps might be hampering the process. Have you had any experience with perhaps a scenario like that, and how do you deal with it?
We can find some parents can be quite, obviously, their belief of what they're seeing and what they're not, what we believe we're seeing. I suppose it's just working with the parent, reassuring them, offering support, and trying to work together to try and get the same end goal, actually not alienating the parents, because we do believe the parents, they know the child better than anybody, better than me, better than the doctors. So it's trying to work towards them, because at the end of the day, I'm seeing these children from 0 to 18. So I'm with them for that whole journey. So the relationship needs to be good, and I need to work with the parents in a holistic approach, making sure that we're all setting the same goals, but actually trying to advise them on what the research and evidence is. as well as what their thoughts and feelings are towards their child.
No, absolutely. And are you seeing your patients face-to-face, or are you seeing them virtually? And has that changed post-COVID?
So I continue to see, even throughout COVID, I actually continue to do home visits. So I do home visits for all of my patients. We do run a mainstream clinic, which means a telephone clinic for our mainstream children that go to mainstream school. But the majority of our patients do receive home visits. We feel when we're in the patient's home, we get the best out of the parents and the patient. Okay. We get the communication is amazing. We feel like we're able to see what's actually going on, what practically works for these families within their own homes, rather than giving them a plan and expecting, and then actually it's not realistic. So, but throughout COVID, we continue to do a home visit. We don't do virtual working. I don't know if that's a hindrance, but no, we've continued to do face-to-face. That's how we've continued to work, especially in paediatrics. We feel that works better.
Yeah, no, definitely. You've given us a very good success story of how low energy peptide feed can be so successful in the use of a patient. But I wonder, I mean, is there research also that kind of accumulates all of the positive benefits that we're seeing in this area as well?
I think there will be some research, from a lower calorie absorption point of view, maintenance of weight. But I just think overall, it's just really worked. I suppose I've only had such a small cohort of patients that I've used this feed with. So I haven't got a vast amount of experience, but for my patients, it actually worked really well. And there's a small amount of evidence to say it has worked, especially making sure that you're providing these good volumes, vitamins and minerals, rather than having to supplement all the additional that they need in the form of a vitamin supplement or a protein supplement.
Yeah. And do you think that a number of dietitians know about the availability of these types of feeds?
I presume so. From our department, the department I work in, Sheffield Children's, we do. Because we have good exposure to the marketing that comes through, and we make sure we get updates from our representatives to ensure we know what's out there, and reading the literature that comes out. And as discussion, we do discussion groups throughout the area. So I hope everybody's well aware of these products.
I'm just asking that question because obviously from our conversation, I've already learned that the choice and the changing of a field has a massive impact on progression of a condition or also on a patient's health. And so obviously the ability to say, these are your choice of feeds is very important. And you've seen already that in the one scenario that you gave, that it was effective in the way that you used it. And I'm assuming that overall in the small cohort that you have worked with, there's been a reduction in perhaps complications and consultations, and there's had a positive impact on parents and families as well. What is the role of perhaps other health professionals within the team in making this all work?
So we work very closely with our gastroenterology consultants. So they would be, I suppose, from their perspective, is when they're aware of these products, they would be asking for our advice regarding their introduction, and they would support the parents in encouraging them to listen to the dietitians, listen to the products that are available, and why we're asking or why we're wanting to try these alternatives. And also we work really closely with our tube feeding nurses, and they support the families within the home. So we'll do joint visits, and they will support regarding symptom control or anything that they can work on if it's not feed related. But yeah, we work a very close team with our, like I say, tube feeding, speech to language, and we work very closely within the community.
Yeah, so super important to have the multidisciplinary team working as in all aspects of healthcare. What are the main challenges do you see within enteral nutrition and effective care, or perhaps even with choosing what type of feeds that as a dietitian you would be recommending?
Yeah, we find, I suppose, funding, if okay. We go down that route from a staffing point of view and a team point of view, I think sometimes enteral feeding within the community can be a second thought. So we try and keep the children out of hospital. We try and ensure that they've got the best form of care whilst at home and supporting them, and actually being able to have a full range of these products that we're able to use within the community setting that is easy to implement, easy to order. Is it really been really helped that we've come actually we find nurses may suggest, because we work so closely, suggest a feed and say, well, actually, do you think this will be good for this type of patient, or this patient is experiencing symptoms of this, I know you used it with another product, with another patient, would this product be suitable? So again, it'd be great if there was hundreds of dietitians working in the community in Sheffield, but I think that's a bit of a dream. But actually, I think it's really good that I can lean on multidisciplinary team, and they're actually aware of these products that I use in my practice, and they would actually be recommending them or asking me if it would be appropriate. So, yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of supporting dietitians like yourself working in this space, where do you think the gap is, or what resources do you think would help? We said that there's experience, but perhaps some framework of how you make the decisions of different feeds might be useful for new dietitians. But yeah, do you have any suggestions in terms of research, resources, development, innovations, what you as a dietitian would like to see?
I suppose it's just making sure, keep going with the communication for a lot of the new dietitians coming through, making sure they're aware of the products, they're aware why the products are being used, why you may use them with your patient, why this particular product may be good for your patient. I think the difficulty is every patient is completely different, and they're getting more and more complex. So when we've tried to do a guidance ourselves to say, this is why you would use this product, but it's so difficult to say what would work for one would not work for the other. So what we do find is just if the communication's there and we can keep going with the educational information for new dietitians coming through and nurses coming through and doctors coming through, that we're all aware of what's out there, what we can use, why we use it. Actually, this may work for one, but not for the other. And I think it's difficult to say, is this a clear pathway through? And I think we found that ourselves, we would struggle to say, if you've done this product, this is not working, go to this product. It just
doesn't work that way.
Fit, unfortunately. So.
Yeah. And I guess it's conversations like this, Marie, isn't it? Listening and tapping into conversations like this, tapping into people like yourself who have worked extensively in this area and learning from your experience is really valuable. So I've loved our conversation, Marie. And before we wrap up, I would love it if you could share your main takeaways for other healthcare professionals that are working with this area that you think would have a real impact on their work and in this field.
It's just, the main takeaway point is just speaking to your representatives, making sure you're aware, you read the literature, you're just aware of all the products that's on the market, and actually just trying not to be quite set on the products that you use, and actually branch out. And what works for one doesn't always work for everybody else. And just making sure you're up to date with all the communication, and just making sure if you're not sure, just reach out to other dietitians. Because we're all here, all doing the same job, and hopefully able to support each other.
Yeah, no, staying open, super important.
Yeah,
well, Marie, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside Medical Nutrition. If you enjoyed the podcast and found the content useful, please share it with your colleagues. And consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. For more information on this topic or to share your feedback, please visit the Nestle Health Science N+ Hub or click on the link in the show notes.